You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
Practice.
All right, it is another month here of politics on Positive Cynicism. I really want to call these episodes political hypocrisy because that's my main focus. Just going into this, so that you know, I claim to be a moderate with conservative leanings, and I know I do kind of lean a little more conservative, but part of that is because of political hypocrisy. We're going to get into that, and I am joined, as always, on the political episodes by Brandon Cooley, our resident political expert here at Positive Cynicism. So, Brandon, welcome back to the show.
Always glad to be on.
And this one's a little special because you actually just celebrated your birthday a few days prior to this taping and got a political birthday present in which the Mueller report came out on the same day as your birthday.
Yeah, I told you I couldn't believe it. The odds of the Mueller report coming out the same day as my birthday. It's quite a good birthday present for Mueller. Got the PDF and read some of it. Yeah, it was a good day.
Okay, yeah, I have not. I had planned on reading it. I have not, mainly because what I have read seemed to be a lot of legal jargon, and I am not a legal person. That's why I did not become a lawyer, as I once thought about. But have you read? How much have you read?
Oh, I skimmed it. I didn't read, like, all of it. No one really does read all of it. I read maybe 15 pages, 20 pages of the summary and some of the parts I was interested in, which I'll get to in a second. But, yeah, not all of it, though, because, I mean, to read all of it, you have to have a lot of time in your hands, because it's not only the first volume, it's the second volume, too, and together that's around 800, 750 pages, okay. 700,
yeah, and
roughly.
I believe it's pretty long. I believe you can go to Amazon and order the book version. So yeah, do you feel, because I know a lot of the press was upset that they held a press conference, Attorney General Barr held a press conference before the report was out, and they were accusing him of trying to spin the report before anyone had a chance to read it. But at the same time, if they had put it out there to the media, wouldn't the media then be trying to spin it before the press conference?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what media you're talking about. He did try to spin it, and I think I'm surprised that he did twice because he's kind of destroying his legacy in this last couple of months. I mean, because the Attorney General is not really supposed to be a political operative in that way. And the reason why it was perceived that way is because doing a summary that was that vague about what the findings were is not really is supposed to be his job necessarily, like the to report to the public like that or to spin it on TV before you read it. So I don't know. I mean, and he didn't really summarize it the right way necessarily. I mean, it did sound kind of like Trump was kind of guiding what he was trying to say in terms of no collusion. It wasn't an overview of the report. Basically that's what it's supposed to be. So
now here's my big question is no matter what the report said, no more matter what, Barr said in his press conference or what Mueller will say, I believe he and Barr are going to be testifying before Congress in the next month. Was there anything other than guilty of collusion that this report could have said that would have made the anti-Trump brigade happy or had them believe the report?
It depends on the way you look at it because, I mean, it's not as if, like, I wouldn't say that I'm, like, rejecting the findings of the report. I'm just kind of interpreting it, you know? Like, the collusion, okay, so they didn't collude. Okay, I agree that they didn't find evidence, direct evidence of collusion. We're just not sure what that is, really, because they did have meetings with Russians. They did accept the stolen information. They did know they were going to benefit from it. So it depends on how you define collusion. Like, maybe it's just collusion involves a giant bag of money being passed down. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just as simple as that. It needs to be very obvious. I was more interested in just a very broad overview. I mean, like, because it is about Russian interference. It's not about collusion or obstruction. That that happened because of connections that the Russians had with the Trump campaign and because of the obstruction attempts. But the original purpose was Russian interference, and that way it was successful. He did do a good job of figuring out what happened in 2016. And so that should be the focus of it. Now, the media has been spinning it to be about Trump because that's more exciting, but it is about Russian interference, though. So that's the way I look at it. And I'm more interested in individual things like the Ukraine, how the RNC changed their chancellor platform about the Ukraine like that week, and whether or not that was, you know, because of Russians interfering or Paul Manafort being connected with Russia or this and that. I'm more interested in the kind of the smaller details like that, not necessarily the big overview, like whether or not Trump's guilty or not. Because, I mean, I was assuming they weren't going to find him like red-handed. They weren't going to catch him red-handed like Nixon was in Watergate. I've always compared this more to Iran-Contra than Watergate, really. It's not as blatant as Nixon Watergate was, you know.
Well, and I think I heard something last night before we record this about like people were talking about, you know, when Trump would give his speeches or whatever, and he would call on WikiLeaks to release more information, or, you know, and whether that was collusion or if that was just Trump being Trump. And one thing I always bring up when it, in regards to Trump, is Trump is not a politician, so he's not going to act the way a politician will act. So for him, on the campaign trail, when he's calling out WikiLeaks, he's probably not thinking, you know, in the political sense of, oh, this is a bad thing, or he's probably, again, he's appealing to his base, and he knows that this is a, you know, an issue that will resonate with them. So is it more Trump, I guess this is where you go into, is it Trump, you know, is that colluding or obstruction, or is it Trump being Trump?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the, talking about the quote where he asked Russia to hack into the stolen emails that day. They did hack into it 5 hours later. So, I mean, that's what they've been focusing on. Now, whether or not it was a coincidence or whether or not they were colluding, I don't know. I mean, the funny thing is with colluding is it's not even a crime. They even says in the report it's coordination and like conspiracy. So that's what they were basing it on. And it just depends on how you perceive that. I guess I'm just disappointed in the Republican Party because they're just now accepting that Russia did interfere, even though it was obvious from like the first 3 months after the election. And Trump would just still refuses to believe it because he doesn't want it to be true. But I mean, if you go back to 2012, Mitt Romney was telling us that Russia was one of our geopolitical foes, and Obama laughed at it. We laughed at him. You know, he was proven to be right. I mean, Russia invaded the Ukraine. They tried to invade the Ukraine. And for some reason, 2 years after 2014, the Juba Convention, they watered down support for Ukraine, now pro-Russia. I don't know what happened, but I mean, if you look on an individual conviction, each indictment, there were a lot of people in the Trump campaign who had connections to Russia. So, I mean, if I was a, you know, part of the Democratic Party working in, as a candidate, I'd be focusing on the individual indictments, who was guilty, not just the possibility of someone being guilty. That's not what it's about. It's about the facts and not well, trying to paint Trump as guilty.
Well, you bring up Romney in 2012, and, you know, obviously he famously said Russia was our number one geopolitical force. And Obama at the time said the 80s called, they want their foreign policy back. And he was mocked, and reporters mocked Romney. And now a lot of those reporters are coming out and being like, oh, we were wrong, blah, blah, blah. Which, 8 years later, that's great that you can admit that you were wrong. But given the fact that the Russians did, you know, kind of try to alter the election in 2016, and there were reports that the Obama administration knew about it at least by August of 2016, does the Obama administration take any blame for non-response action or not telling the American public that this was happening and trying to warn them not to believe everything they see on the internet?
Yeah, it's a tough question because I would say that Obama should have been more tough against Russia. They did do sanctions, but they probably could have done more than that at the time. With him telling the public they were hacking the election, I think they perceived they would be trying to interfere on Clinton's behalf, saying that, well, if Trump wins, it may not be a legitimate election, if he had said that. Now he didn't. So it's kind of like either way you kind of lose in that sense. So I'm not sure what he could have said like in the summer of 2016 that would have like, I don't know. Yeah, he probably could have done something though, said something, told the press that there is interference, because this is national security. It's not just elections. It's like, and I mean, it's a dangerous precedent, because it could be, if this is just ignored, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, we could have a whole bunch of countries trying to interfere in our elections. You know, I mean, one supporting the Democrats, one supporting the Republicans, or vice versa. I mean, that's a danger, danger that we face. But
yeah, and I know, you know, there's been talk now after this Mueller report that they are going to start looking into events around 2016, because there is the Steele dossier, which I mean, I've read all about bits and pieces. I still don't fully understand who paid for what, or what information came from where, or who you know, who leaked it. But if they investigate this and they find out that the Obama administration or the Democratic committee was somewhat responsible for any, you know, dealings with Russia on their end, do you think, one, it will be covered as heavily as the Trump collusion? And two, will it be just seen as kind of like political payback, into where your Rachel Maddow's, your CNN's won't follow up, and they'll just blame the Trump administration for trying to get even?
Well, yeah, I think they would cover Obama not doing it, or the Obama administration not doing enough with the cybersecurity. Do you mean coordination, like what happened here with Trump?
Yes.
Because I don't think that's happened since then, or since this, when it occurred. I don't think a foreign government's ever coordinated with a campaign. It's been a while since that ever happened. But
I mean, like, if they were working with the Russians to try to get information on Trump, or trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess just collude with Russia to help them with the election.
Oh, yeah, I doubt that. Well, I mean, if it's all from Putin directing it, I mean, this gets into geopolitics, which I don't know. I mean, I know some about, but it gets into the fact that he hated Clinton, because, I mean, it's really him trying to destroy the EU, because it stands in front of him taking, you know, having more power over the region, like Ukraine, Eastern Europe. And so on the Trump campaign, unlike other previous Republican campaigns, you had people like Steve Bannon, who doesn't like the EU either. You had more of these, the alt-right, who was this new kind of, you know, against globalism. So that worked in favor, that aligned with Putin. So, I mean, that's why he wanted to help. That's why he wanted Trump to win. I don't think Russia helped with any of the Democrats' Obama's campaigns, Romney's campaign. I doubt that happened. I mean, because there's no advantage that he would have in helping him. So.
I'm just curious again, and it, you know, we can say in 2020, if the Democrats win the presidency, that you look at the media landscape, it's going to flip back to what it was under Obama, where CNN, MSNBC will promote the president, most likely, where Fox News will kind of try to, you know, bring him down with every little thing that he does.
You know, you mentioned hypocrisy in the opening thing. I mean, okay, let's say if a Democrat does win in 2020, there's evidence of a foreign country, maybe not China, but just a foreign country, you know, let's say in Europe, that helps the Democratic Party. Okay, so I will not be in favor of that. I have a problem with that too. Like, it's just bad when a foreign country helps a political party, because you don't want that to happen. It's bad when, you know, I mean, it's bad enough if corporations do, but it's even worse when a foreign country does that, affects your whole foreign policy, and, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know the specifics, but I've read reports that, you know, the U.S. has a tendency to try to influence certain elections at times. So it's bad. I mean, we say it's bad when another country does it to us, but we tend to do it to other places, and then, you know, seem to think it's okay. And now, you know, there are some bills. I think one passed here in California, or was trying to pass, where it would make illegal immigrants or non-citizens able to vote in elections. And I think it was more on the smaller local level, but still, that's like, then you're just kind of inviting people to come in and try to sway the election results.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, it's extreme non-citizens, but I mean, I'm for a path to citizenship, but yeah, non-citizen, that's a step too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know where this is, where this is going to lead. Obviously,
I mean, it's just, I mean, the whole thing is fascinating. I'm surprised people don't care about it, because, I mean, just today, actually, in the Ukraine, the president who won, the new the president elect is a comedian, a 41-year-old comedian who he started a movie where he accidentally becomes president, his own political party based on that movie, and he actually beat the incumbent. I mean, so it's interesting to read, and so now he's going to have to face up Putin, who wants to control the region. I mean, I get the economics, and people don't care about foreign policy; they never really have, but unless there's a war going on. But it's like this does affect. It is important, so yeah. So that's why I've mentioned the Mueller report. But
and we've had a wars going on now for the last 17 years. So I think people are war fatigued, where they don't even pay attention anymore, unless it's something major happens. But and I think more people are focused more on their own life and how it affects. So if something isn't a direct impact that they can tangentially see in their life, they're not going to care. And I think this whole Russia thing is you talk to people who voted for Trump or voted for Hillary, and no one is saying that, oh yes, I saw this ad on Facebook and that totally changed my point of view, or so it's like, how much impact did, how many votes were actually changed by the Russian collusion? Because there is no, or the Russian meddling, because there hasn't been any reports of actual like vote tampering. So
there's not really anything like that. It's more just a widespread effort to there's hacking, but it wasn't really like election. It wasn't the votes. It was Facebook. It was social media, Twitter. It was trying to like creating fake IDs, just trying to create fake people in the U.S., not really to vote, but just to spread misinformation. And we'll never know how many people it swayed or not. We'll never really figure that out. You can't really prove or disprove that. I've seen some of the fake news things they've done. It's not true, but it's also Americans' fault for actually believing it and reposting it. So it's, takes two people to,
Right. And as I said, I think on our last episode, it's funny how we complain about a foreign country, but look at our own media, who is so biased in their reporting and how they focus stories and frame stories that, maybe there should be some introspective look there. And obviously, with your cable news networks, there's a big difference between news and opinion. And I think a lot of people confuse the two. And I would say that, especially in the primetime lineup, you get more opinionated anchors than actual news anchors.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, the later in the day it becomes, the more opinionated it is. Yeah. And now it's not just cable news. It's like the issue is opinionated op-ed website as opposed to like actual news sites. I always make sure when there's no information, I try to go to the stuff that's like the gist before I go to the opinions and, stuff like, Politico was, I guess, maybe center left, but it's pretty middle of the road. It's not really that opinionated, the stuff like that, but even that, New York Times and Washington Post, I think some people on the right believe those are left wing, and they maybe are center left. Sometimes they do have conservatives on, the right op-ed stuff on there, but to think that's fake news, though, with the New York Times and Washington Post, it just shows what different times we're living in, because that wasn't the case 30 years ago,
And I think, we're at that point where if someone says something that doesn't agree with my belief or my opinion, then they're opposite. You can say, oh, you're conservative, but if you say anything negative about Trump, well, then you're just another liberal or another anti-Trump, never Trumper. And it's like, no, there are, I love the Trump presidency just because of everybody freaking out about it. It's entertainment to me. Like you were saying, the Ukraine comedian, I think that's kind of what we get with Trump, which probably not the best deal, but the fact that it's been 2 years and people still like, Trump will tweet something and people just get all, bent out of shape about it. And it's like, have you not been paying attention for 2 years? But I'm also not going to sit here and be like, he's the greatest president ever. He's got his flaws, and that's going to segue into our next topic, which is on Wednesday, the day after the show drops, Joe Biden will announce his candidacy for the president. First question is, Joe's taken some flack over the last couple of weeks about his very hands-on approach to politics, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Do you think that his, in this era of Me Too and the era of no old white guys from the liberal side of things, do you think he's going to have a lot of pushback to his candidacy, or do you think he will get a pass just because he's Joe Biden?
Yeah, that happened after we did the last episode. Yeah. I'm just glad he didn't apologize for it, because it wasn't malicious. I mean, that's really as simple as that. He was being awkward. I mean, I told a friend on Facebook that, yeah, I mean, we've suffered worse at Thanksgiving dinners when our old grandparents come to try to, I mean, hug us. I mean, it's just that old people are clueless like that sometimes. I mean, was awkward, yes, but I mean, it's not a scandal. It's like, it's not Harvey Weinstein. It's not Bill Cosby. It's not, you know, this and that. It's not a Me Too thing. But now, him being an old white guy, I mean, he's in my top three candidates. I mean, it's him, Amy Klobuchar, and maybe Pete Buttigieg by this point. I mean, so I hope he does well. I mean, I'll have to see his debates and see how well he carries himself, because age does matter if you're not in, you know, in touch with the American people. Bernie Sanders is in some way, but because he's actually older than Biden. But yeah, so, I mean, can an old white guy win? Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders almost has his own cult right now. You know, which I'm not a part of. I actually voted from the primaries back in the day in 2016. It's not like I regret that, because the other option was Clinton, but I don't want him to win this time, because I think he's damaging to the Democratic Party. He's moving it way too far to the left. He's good at recognizing the problems that exist, but he's not good at coming up with solutions. So I think that, yeah, someone like Biden or Klobuchar would be a better choice for the nominee. You know, especially Klobuchar, because, I mean, that's the Midwest vote. She's in Minnesota. I mean, she could, I think, not easily beat Trump, but it would be the best chance of, you know, someone like the two of them.
Isn't she the one that has the baggage of not being very polite to her staff?
yeah. Which is just such a non-issue for me. Like, yeah. I mean, it would have been great if the Clinton campaign had some yelling going on, some actual, like, because that was a terrible campaign. That was, Yeah, because it's like, it is like a circular firing squad. I think Obama said that a few weeks ago on like an interview. I mean, the Democrats are tearing each other apart over the smallest things, and there hasn't even been a scandal yet, and yet they're treating every small thing like the scandal, like every small setback or every small flaw that the candidate has. You know, it's blowing up out of proportion, which is ridiculous. But, So what's your opinion about Biden? Do you want him to?
I think his time has come. I think the fact that he didn't run in 2016 kind of gives credence to the theory that the Democrats were like just stacking the deck for Hillary. But I think the main trouble that he will have if he goes up against Trump is on the issue of the economy. I mean, under Trump, the economy has done a lot better than people expected, and better than even Obama said was possible. And so when going up against Biden, you know, who was vice president for 8 years before Trump and kind of had a lower economy, it's like, okay, do you want to go back to those policies that weren't as successful as what Trump has been doing? So, but I think Biden has the name brand recognition, which is going to help in the primaries, because primaries are name brand. You know, people aren't, especially with 20 different Democrats running, I doubt a lot of people are going to really dig in and figure out which one has the best ideas or the best policies.
Yeah. Well, with the economy, I mean, I just look at the numbers, and we've added the same number of jobs each month since the, you know, 2014, 2013. I mean, unemployment may have been like 5 point something when Obama left. It's 3.9 now. I mean, it's been improving. I don't know if Trump has really helped or, like, you know, or not. I mean, you know, the tax cut, it's definitely created a deficit, which, again, Republicans don't care about with the tax cut. But, I mean, there might be a recession here in the next year or two. I mean, it would be great to actually wait to do a tax cut when people need it. I don't know if it really changed much. You know, the economy is just still going. So, now, whether or not that affects, I mean, people do vote in the economy. So let's say there is a recession. Yeah, it would be a harder hill to climb for a Democrat. But I mean, I think the economy has improved in a way that people are still, you know, the wages haven't really improved that much, as much as they should have been, you know. there's a lot of cases of people working two part-time jobs as opposed to one with benefits, stuff like that, you know? So that's what they'll probably run on if the economy's still, you know, pumping. You know,
yeah. I mean, yeah. And there's, you know, different aspects of that because, of course, the Republican answer will be, well, Obamacare is cutting benefits because or cutting hours because employers have to provide benefits if you have X amount of employees or working X amount of hours. So, you know, if they can get rid of that, then maybe that will help the economy. But then you're like, but then the Democrats will be like, look, they're trying to cut healthcare and they're trying to cut this. And that's, I mean, what it all boils down to is I think people will vote on whatever. Sadly, there is a lot of kind of one issue voters, and it's going to be whatever issue appeals to them, whichever candidate is offering the better solution, whether it's feasible or not, those are the ones they're going to go with.
Yeah. Well, with healthcare, I think that the two biggest issues were healthcare and immigration 2018 midterms, and that's something that they fumbled because, you know, they had so much hunger for Obamacare, and the reason why they didn't, I mean, they hate Obamacare, but the reason why they couldn't, though, is because they had no replacement plan. And because philosophically, and this is why I just can't vote Republicans, because they have no, if it involves the government in any way, they're against it. So if it's not that, then it's what we had before Obamacare, which was still bad. It's just the free market. And it's like, okay, well, we've tried that for, you know, every time before that. So what's your plan? You know, they didn't have one. The immigration, it was just invasion. I mean, it was the migrant caravan. I mean, I couldn't believe how blatant it got that this migrant caravan's coming at the border and how many ever months. And that was the main talking point that Trump used in the midterms. And neither worked. I mean, Democrats took a lot of House seats. But, of course, it's normal for a midterm election 2 years after first president that usually the opposing party wins. But so, yeah, I mean, like, if Trump does the same thing he did last time, will it work? And I think a lot of it has to do with how unlikable Clinton was. I think anybody more likable than Clinton will have a better chance, you know, and they should have to win those three states, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. I call it Miscellvania. It's like one area of the country. Yeah. So, I mean, it'll just depend on those three states and how good the candidate is. So.
Well, I think it would be hard pressed to find a more unlikable candidate than Clinton, but it brings up,
okay. Besides Trump. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Trump is, but I don't know. Trump is, again, I find Trump entertaining. I don't think he's a good person and, you know, he has tons of issues, but as a figurehead or as a, just a character, I think he's a better character than Clinton was.
Really?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I can't think of anybody more despicable in politics besides Trump since David Duke. I mean, that's like, he's the most despicable. I mean, I always said that Clinton should have gone on that debate stage and said, would you trust your daughter around him? I mean, or would you trust him around your daughter? You know, that's simple questions like that. Yeah.
No, and I'm agreeing with you. He's a garbage person. Like,
see, that's the funny thing is I understand why people hate Clinton. I never minded Hillary Clinton. She's a very cold person, but so am I. I mean, that's just how I'd be like her if I was running. I wouldn't be able to connect with voters like that. I couldn't do the acting required.
Yeah.
Like her husband could. I mean, that's
And that's part of it, part of the process. And that's where Trump, for some reason, is able to connect with people or at least make people think he can connect with them. And, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, one of the issues with Trump right now is his whole tax return issue. And I personally don't care about politicians' taxes. Like, it's just not an issue for me. But a lot of the Democrats have come out and released their tax returns. I know Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Beto O'Rourke. And a lot of these Democrats that are calling for higher taxes or more money to help the government or, you know, free healthcare, free college, all this stuff that is going to raise taxes. And their tax returns have shown that they give very little to charity. And they do very little. I think Beto O'Rourke was like a third of 1% of his income went to charity. Do you think that, I mean, is that something that will come up as a hindrance of, okay, you're asking me to give more of my money, but you don't even give your money, you know, where, I guess, put your money where your mouth is. And even Bernie Sanders, when he was on his town hall on Fox News, was asked, you know, if he would pay 52% of his tax or pay a 52% tax rate, which is what he's advocating for. And his response was to Martha McCollum was, well, why don't you? You make more money than I do. It wasn't, it was like to turn the question instead of answering it. So do you think when push comes to shove, if these Democrats have to back up their own ideas with their own behavior, will that become an issue?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a part of that with the, you know, politicians enjoying a very lavish lifestyle. especially Sanders, because, I mean, a lot of Congress people don't when they first get there. But, yeah, with the charity thing, I haven't heard that as an issue, actually. It has come up on my Facebook feed. Of course, mine's more left-wing, so yeah, it's more... Yeah,
I'm not saying it's an issue. I'm just saying it came out, so I'm wondering if it will be...
Yeah, because I did hear... Sanders was a millionaire because of his book, and I kind of chuckled at that because, again, I don't really want him to win. But, you know, I even support some of the policies, the philosophy behind some of his policies, but not going as far as he wants to go. You know, I'm not in favor of free college, obviously, stuff like that, you know. In terms of taxes, I mean, yeah, he should have answered, yes, I would pay a progressive tax up to 52% on my millionth dollar made. That's an obvious answer he could have gone with, not... would you pay it? But, yeah, I mean, it depends on how hypocritical it is, like how much money they are making, because the more a politician makes, the more they seem corrupt, like Romney, you know, okay, Bain Capital. Yeah, I'm not a fan, but, I mean, was it corrupt? Well, I mean, it's just what they did. That's just what the, you know, that industry does. I think the reason why they're asking for Trump's tax returns is that he didn't give it. It's just funny. He didn't show it in the general election last time. He said it was under audit. He's been under audit supposedly for 2 years now, you know. And honestly, it just goes back to the birth certificate. I mean, people still remember his first entry into politics in 2011, roughly, was asking for Obama's birth certificate. So, like, well, why don't you show your tax returns? It's the equivalent, you know, like, you want to be legitimate, and then there you go. You got to show your, you know, it's just more rhetoric in the campaign trail, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more diversion and just something to hit people, something that can be played up in the media to foster not disbelief, but just an issue that will hang over his head for himself.
Well, and there may be something in the tax returns. I mean, there's been smoke. There's been smoke in his whole life of real estate deals in New York with, you know, and Russian oligarchs buying real estate and, you know, building Trump, casinos that didn't actually get used. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff. So, I mean, there could be something there. We don't know. But
I don't know. I think we have bigger issues.
And let's say that there is something we figure out with the Southern District of New York. There is an investigation. We find something they did illegal. Should Democrats focus on that? Will people care they did something illegal? I actually don't think they would. I don't think you can actually convert. I don't think that you can convince someone that him doing something illegal 15 years ago relates to their problems now. So while they should mention it, maybe, I don't think it's good to focus on that, on the stuff that happened 10 or 15 years ago. As opposed to what's happening right now in the future, you know. So.
Right, and Trump is different. Like, is like we said, he's not a politician. So until 2016, 2015, any business dealings he had, anything would have been on a personal nature. And yeah, you can say he's corrupt as a businessman, which I don't want to paint all businessmen as corrupt, but let's say a good 5% are probably working under, you know, less than ideal situations. But yeah, it's these things where if it's something that came out from his private life as opposed to if it's something that he has done since becoming president. And I think that's your biggest issue is, again, going back to the Russian collusion, is if he was working in regards to something that would affect national security, that's an issue. But if it's just a normal business deal,
I don't think he's smart enough to collude. I don't think he's smart enough to run a business. I think a lot of people have run his business for him. I think he's taken the credit for a lot of his whole life, taking credit for what other people have done for him. And I think that's another case of the campaign. I think that the people like Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, they're the ones who committed crimes, and they are going to prison, or Roger Stone not yet, but probably will be. But so
yeah, and I think it
because he's not a smart person. I mean, that's the thing. He's not. He's probably the, I mean, least educated, least like inquisitive president we've ever had in the last 10 or 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
It's a different discussion.
obviously it's the people you surround yourself with. And as someone who wasn't a politician, who's more of a businessman, I wonder, you know, how these people came to be in his circle of appointees, of a position of power. And, you know, someone like Betsy DeVos obviously bought her position, but
or Betsy DeVos. But yeah, the Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Cohen, like how much influence did they have, and how much were they working for their own agenda to help themselves?
Yeah. Yeah, there was some of that, yeah. But, I mean, yeah, we will find out in these Mueller did give a lot of stuff to these other investigations happening. And with the financial, you know, campaign finance, he did break the law by paying off these porn stars and Playboy models. Michael Cohen told, you know, he does have tapes of, and we heard one of them of saying, we'll pay him in cash. Like, okay, well, there you go. That's breaking the law, but
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and again, that's a thing where it's like, is that a big issue, or is that just, again, is it Trump being Trump and being the businessman and just being like, oh, this is, you know, because I'm sure in all his business dealings, he has probably bribed several people and several organizations to get things done. And so, in a sense, is that just business as normal and not thinking about how it affects or reflects on the political aspect?
Yeah, that's the intent. Well, but it is, I mean, yeah, it's the intent, and it's not something that affects policy. It is a lot of money to pay, but it is hypocritical, though, to have, you know, the evangelicals all aligned behind Trump. I mean, I get it with, you know, Romney's candidate, McCain, George W. Bush, obviously, you know, he was evangelical, but Trump, the least Christian president in the history of our country ever, to align behind him is very hypocritical. So there's a sense of, like, disbelief they are doing it. I mean, that's the...
Yeah, and you know, that's, you know, I mean, I had a conversation with Eric Bennett, who hosts every second week here on Positive Cynicism, and he was asking me one night after a taping, he's like, as a Christian, how can you get behind Trump? And it's like, I don't, for me personally, I don't look at as a president as a religious leader. I look at them more as a, you know, a leader of the country. But also, it because we only had two choices, it's like the old saying, it's which one is the better of the worst. And when you have the Democrats who are fighting for, you know, the abortion bills, late term abortion, and everything else that goes against Christian value, and then Trump, who by his own lifestyle is not Christian, but then he's fighting for abortion or the life of the unborn or all the stuff that is playing up to that base. That's why I think people get behind him. But if there are, you know, if they do think he is actually morally not corrupt or bankrupt, I think they're fooling themselves.
Yeah. I mean, like, as someone who's not religious at all in any way whatsoever, I mean, it's not like the abortion issue isn't something I really, it's not one of the big issues for me, but it's like late-term abortions, third-term abortions, they're so rare that it's just whenever it affects the life of the mother, that's been blown up to be perceived as like happening constantly. Mm-hmm. It's really not. I mean, I think it's really rare that ever happens. So, I mean, just in Georgia, I mean, they've gone so far right that now abortion's essentially illegal because it has to happen the first 6 weeks. Brian Kemp just passed that, which is not, means 2 weeks because you know, and within 4 weeks, you don't know if you're pregnant or not. So, yeah. So, I mean, abortion essentially regulates, it's restricted so much to where it is almost illegal now in Georgia. So, I mean, they've gone the other direction, but,
I've heard Alyssa Milano is leading the boycott to take all the work away from Georgia because of this bill, which, one, I don't see how it really affects the entertainment industry other than if I want to be snarky and talk about, all the sexual harassment that goes on in Hollywood. But I don't know. Last month we talked about Beto because he was the rising star, and now Beto has kind of fallen back, and there's a new rising star in the Democrat, or I guess at least for the next month or whatever. And I am going to butcher his name. You mentioned it earlier, but it's Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. You should have said the word Buddha and then judge.
Buddha and judge. Okay. Because I saw a shirt that he was promoting that said butt hinge. And so I was like, okay. Yeah. But Buddha judge. Yeah. And he's one that when he first came out, I was like, okay, let me, you know, I don't know anything about him. Let me find out more about him. And he seemed decent. But now, the last couple of weeks, he seems to be picking a one sided fight with Vice President Pence, because Pete is a married gay man, mayor, and he's complaining about the way that Pence has treated gay people, but Pence has not responded to any comments that he's made, and people have posted photos of the two of them together in what seem to be, you know, a friendly environment. So do you see Pete making any waves in the party, or and do you think his fight with Pence is a good way to get attention?
I think it's a great way to get attention. Yeah, because we've all forgotten how despicable Mike Pence is as a person. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the many reasons. Yeah, he's just a better speaker than Beto is. I mean, there's that sense of like, who's the next Obama? It's like, well, Beto wasn't. I mean, he was a good candidate in Texas, not a good candidate apparently in Iowa and New Hampshire, or just the U.S. But his website wasn't good for one. But anyway, back to Pete Buttigieg, though. Yeah, he's just better. I mean, the first time I ever saw him, when I first heard him announced, I'm like, really? The mayor of South Bend, Indiana? Because it's a city we've heard of. But on the CNN town hall that he did, he was great. The way he answered questions, it wasn't too emotional. It wasn't too, like, it wasn't, obviously he was trying to appeal to people's emotions, that kind of thing. It was just very direct, very, you know, coming up with solutions that were creative, very, you know, just, he answered questions a better way than Kamala Harris did, than all these other people that we saw before him. Which was surprising that the mayor of South Indiana could do that more so than better than a senator. But I think he has a chance to stay in as long as he runs the campaign the same way that he's been running it. Because once Biden becomes a candidate, there's just going to be this chance to kind of knock him off the hill, so to speak. You know, the people on the hill right now are Biden, Sanders, Harris, and maybe O'Rourke still. But that's the goal, is, you know, to knock the said frontrunners off of the hill. And I think Buttigieg is a good alternative to Sanders because he is more left-wing, but he's not so far left that he's just – policies he's proposing are, you know, rational. They're not too crazy. But he's not a Democrat socialist. You know, that's what – that's the – I can't vote for someone who calls himself that.
Well, and you mentioned that he's speaks better than a senator. Do you think it helps that he is from the Midwest, whereas Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren are seen as coastal elites? I don't know what Pete's financial situation is, but I don't, is he more relatable to the average American than these other politicians?
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's the reason why Biden, Klobuchar, and Buttigieg are more relatable than, as opposed to, Warren, Harris, Booker. Yeah, the way they speak, they appeal to more people than the coastal elites, as they call them, you know? Yeah, in terms of candidacy, has anybody else announced that? I mean, yeah, I don't see how why people like Eric Swalwell are announcing, like, because he's in California. I don't see, like, any. There's like 20 now, Kansas, I think, or 18 or 19. Yeah. It's crazy, the number. Maybe they're just trying to go for a Senate run later down the road. I don't know. Some of these people, I don't know what benefit they have. Or maybe a VP slot. Maybe they're going for that.
But or is it because we joke about Bernie Sanders being a millionaire? And I believe from his tax returns, it shows like what the spike in his income came after 2016, after he ran for president. So is this a way for some of these people just to get their name out there and maybe get that book deal, maybe get a speaking engagement? And so whereas, you know, running for office kind of helps you increase your standard of living.
Yeah. Well, not you can't use it for your own personal gain, but you can use it for a book deal, just name recognition. Yeah. You can use the money you get from your campaign to influence other elections,
right?
Which is definitely what they're going to try to do. Well, why wouldn't they? You know, after they lose, I mean, they got to use the money somehow. But they just could, you know, sway the DNC platform in 2020. They could sway elections in their home state. You know, there's a lot of reasons why they could be running, Yeah, I think the people that definitely watch for would be Buttigieg. Hopefully Klobuchar, because she's one of my favorites, but maybe not. She's like not at the top five. But yeah, I want to see though if Biden just kind of like, once he is a candidate, if, you know, everybody kind of just loses interest in the first month. It could happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're 2 months away from the first debate. I believe it's in June or July. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, I think with the amount of people that they have, I think they're going to split them into two different debates. But instead of putting all the front runners on one stage and the lesser knowns on another, I think I would hope that they would mix it up a little bit, just to because I think, as we said, there's name brand recognition, which is what people's going for. But so if you put a, you know, Biden with some of the lesser knowns and let the lesser knowns get some attention, maybe that will help them out a little bit. But then again, is that what the DNC wants, or do they have they already picked who they want to be their candidate, and so they want to make sure that that person gets the easy road?
I think they're so scared of what would of what happened last time. They don't want to pick any candidates. I mean, yeah, I don't think they've picked a Biden versus Sanders or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure they're opinionated, but I mean, Tom Perez is the DNC guy now. I mean, he was an Obama cabinet guy. I mean, so he probably is preferring Biden, but he's not going to say that, though. It'd be a terrible idea for him to say that to anybody, to, you know, because they were so paranoid about the Debbie Wasserman Schultz preferring Clinton over Sanders. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up here on this episode. So I'm going to say, obviously, every month there's so much happening right now that, you know, we delayed the taping of this episode by about 3 or 4 days, and stuff just happened. The Mueller report, Biden's announcement, everything came out after we would have pre-taped. So it's hard to stay up to date on everything going on, but what do you predict will happen in the next month?
Let's see, next month. It's hard to say because, well, they're going to have hearings. They're going to subpoena, well, not subpoena, but ask Barr to testify, maybe Mueller. So there's going to be a lot more tension on that. I mean, we didn't discuss it, the obstruction. I mean, they're focusing on that, not collusion, but obstruction. And there's a lot of cases where they're saying Don McGahn single-handedly saved his presidency because he ordered Don McGahn to fire the special counsel, and McGahn refused. There's going to be a lot of drama over the actual, like, words of the Mueller report, and because he didn't want to really decide on that. He didn't. He just gave it to Congress to, like, okay, this is what he did to try to obstruct, but we're not sure if this is really counts as obstruction. You go for it. There's going to be a lot of drama over that. Probably nothing comes from it, though. No opinions changing. Yeah, then Biden actually running, and we'll see how good he does in the campaign trail. But what do you think will happen?
I don't know. I had a thought, and I just lost it. But, yeah, I think the testimony – oh, I was just going to say – okay, so Elizabeth Warren has come out and said that they should follow up with impeachment proceedings. Pelosi and even Adam Schiff today said that probably not the best course of action. And
it's not, yeah.
Yeah, I think – I mean, we're 18 months away. Again, unless there was some definitive proof that national security is you know, hindered by the Trump presidency – impeachment is not the best way. I think they should focus on the election and beat him in the election, come up with a better game plan than what he is offering. And I think if you go forward with impeachment, it's just going to divide the country even more. And I think
Trump would need to shoot someone, honestly, on live television to get impeached. And even then, Republicans would still support him. So it's not even like it's not even worth.
Yeah. I mean, he said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and he'd still be popular.
He's right.
Yeah, and it's, but I think it's, I think the Democratic Party themselves are, like you mentioned earlier, they're going after each other. It's and you have, you know, the group of five, as Nancy Pelosi, I think, has commonly referred to them, that are getting all the attention, but they're not really speaking for the Democratic Party. I think the Democrats need to kind of come together and focus on what their issue is. But with 20 candidates, you also have people that need to separate themselves from the pack and be like, okay, why are you better than this other person? So I don't know. I think we're going to see probably another three people announce their candidacy. None of them serious contenders, but just people that are trying to get some name brand recognition. And then, yeah, I think once Mueller and Barr testify, I'm curious as to what the public reaction is going to be. Are people going to care, or because the Mueller report is out, have people moved on?
Yeah. The best going to happen is that it's solidify the Democratic base behind whichever candidate it is. That's really the only goal they have right now. Cause they're not going to sway any Trump voters. Moderates, maybe a few, but not very many. It's just making sure the Democrats are united behind the candidate against Trump. Not for the candidate, but against Trump. You know, I would say that I vote against Republicans, not for Democrats. It's just some, you know, that's my motto. But and it's good that, you know, the campaigns are starting so early, because we have a chance to kind of sort out the weaklings from the strong candidates. Like Beto, I always question how good of a candidate he'd be in a presidential election. Now we figure out, not a very good candidate. He's just all show, no substance. So
all cattle, no hat, as they say in Texas, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, you said you vote against Republicans, not for Democrats. After this whole 2016 election, I have a hard time deciding, you know, voting for a Democrat because of the way that they have acted after this whole election and everything. So I think I think it's a common theme here on these episodes. We always say it's like, how do we get that, bring back the unity of having a centralized candidate that can appeal to both sides? And it doesn't matter.
Well, actually, just real quick, you mentioned the subject before the, all the stuff happened in the Mueller report. You mentioned the topic would be what would make you vote for the opposing party. They actually have a simple answer. I mean, really, it'd be have to be before 1980. I'd vote for Republican. But before, after 1980, I never would. And the reason why is because there's a saying, Democrats fall in love with their candidate, Republicans fall in line. And so what's happened since 1980 is that there's been fewer and fewer moderates. John McCain and Jeff Flake were some of the last moderates that were in the Senate. There's only a few left now. And before 1980, there were a lot more moderate Republicans. There were more moderate Democrats. And there still are now. But it's happening in the Democratic Party, too. They're moving more farther to the left.
Yeah.
Because Biden would be one of the obvious candidates. He is moderate, you know. But he's not liberal enough for the left-wing part of the party. So, I just couldn't vote for Republican unless they are moderate. And it's like a local election, maybe. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And I hope it doesn't happen to I hope it doesn't happen to the Democrats either. I hope there are moderates. But,
yeah. Unfortunately, I think we are, and I think it's the fallacy of social media where the loudest voices get mistaken for being the populace, and I think the extremists on both sides are the loudest voices online, and so you just figure that that's the way the parties align, when in actuality. You and I have had discussions. I've had discussions with other friends who are opposite politically to me. But when you have that discussion, you realize that you're actually not that far apart. And I wish that the political parties could understand that. And instead of trying to placate the loud voices, you know, think about the entire country as a whole.
Yeah. It's been leading to this ever since, you know, talk radio, cable news, 24 hours, Fox News, MSNBC. And then in the beginning of this decade, it was social media with the elections. And, you know, Obama was the first to really use social media. But, there's a great movie called Network from 1976 that predicted all of this, actually. It was the idea that we'd have these cult personalities on TV, like controlling the way people think about politics and the culture. And, like, I'm sure you've seen it or not, it's a great movie. It's really eerie to watch.
Yeah, I say it is more relevant today than it was when it was made.
Yeah.
It's
my favorite. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for this month. Again, so much going on. We'll try to recap the next month when we get together at the end of May. Brandon, thanks again for joining me. Are you working on is there any campaigns in Georgia right now, or they just have elections, right?
That's pretty dead right now. I mean, they've started elections for the primaries next year, but that's a long time off from now. So, yeah. But
all right. Well,
it will pretty soon, though. They'll get in full swing.
All right. Well, gives you time to go watch Avengers Endgame. Yeah. So, all right. As always, question everything, especially when it comes to politics. And remember, do something positive.
Q Howard.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value. So
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go out?
You've got to get mad.
67. I know it goes to Louisville and Atlanta.
We're not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chairs, open the window, stick your head out and yell, and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.